There's this scenario in sales where the alert in our CRM goes off, and perhaps it tells us that we need to reach out to Jane at the ABC company. As our fingers are reaching for the keyboard, many people are like deciding what they're going to say, and they're kind of winging it. So this week, we're going to talk all about two things that you absolutely must, like all caps, must think about before you send that sales email. My name is Paul Castain, and I'm the author of the Your Sales Playbook blog and your host for the Sales Playbook podcast. I've personally trained over 10,000 sales reps, sales leaders, and business owners to sell more. So get your playbooks ready because school is now in session. Okay, so before we get down to business, I have a really cool freebie that I want to make sure that you're taking full advantage of, and it's called the Sales Playbook Podcast app. And if you visit yoursalesplaybook.com/app and you do it from your smartphone, you save it to your home screen, two really cool things are going to happen. Number one, you're going to get free access to 300 free audio sales lessons. Let me say it again. Free access to 300 free, all caps, free audio sales lessons. I have been archiving these for the last 7 years that I've been doing the Sales Playbook podcast. And the difference between this and like iTunes is that, I mean, last time I checked with iTunes, I think you can only, they only archive like, what, like 20 of them or something like that. So this, immediately, you have all this access, which is pretty cool. 7 years worth, right? 300 different audio sales lessons. But the other thing is that you'll never miss a beat with future free audio sales lessons because I update at a rate of about 2 to 3 free audio sales lessons each and every month. So if you like get in on it now, right, like a year from now, and we know how quick a year goes by, you're going to have like what, like another like 30 to 40 of these, right? That's like with me slacking a bit. So you can snag your free app by going to yoursalesplaybook.com/app. With that, man, we got to get down to business. So there are two things that I want you to think about before you email a potential client. And again, I want to just spell out the scenario that many of us have been guilty of in sales, right? So if you use a CRM, an alert goes off that is basically telling you that you need to contact someone, right? Doesn't matter who cares, right? I mean, well, I'm not going to make up a name just to appease you guys. You get the gist here. So what happens is many times as we're reaching for the phone or our fingers are going toward the keyboard, we're thinking about what we're going to say. Now, I know a lot of us in sales, man, we got to be really quick. We got to be really witty. But the quality of that communication really isn't going to be as good as it should be. So there are two things I want to make sure that you're always thinking about, whether you're premeditating your communication, which is what I really try to preach, or even if you decide, okay, I have to reach out to that crazy guy, Paul Castain, to try to sell him something. Here are the two things I want you to think about. Now, the first one, you're going to want to say duh to this one, but I promise you it is nowhere near as obvious as you think it is. I mean, it's really not. You're going to think it's one of two scenarios, and you're going to be partially right. So I want you to get ready for that inner voice that's going to say duh, and that's sales 101, because if you don't do that, what's going to happen is that you're only going to get part of the truth, and you're going to continue doing something that's going to have you sending, what do we call it? Yeah, a me too email. Like really a shitty email is what I'm trying to say. So the first thing that you want to do is you want to answer the question, well, what do I want to accomplish by sending this email, right? That is like so damn basic, what I told you. It's like, really, could he like live with himself for saying like some lame advice like that? Yes, I can, right? And here's the deal. The reason why you want to think about what you want to accomplish before you send the email, it's because most of the time, the way that you're probably conditioned to answer that question is, well, Paul, it's simple. I could just answer it right now. I don't even have to do it in the moment. I'm either, you know, what do I want to accomplish? I want to either sell them something or I want to make an appointment. And I really believe that's a big part of the problem, because unless you are like amazing at writing a sales email, or you're amazing on the phone, like a one call close type of person, or a one email type of close type of person, what you're doing is you're really conditioning people to just like disregard and delete you. Because think about it. If all I am ever doing when I'm reaching out to you is trying to sell you something or making an appointment to try to sell you something, really, then is there any value in you continuing to take my call or continuing to read my emails? If you know that's what he's doing every single time, I am conditioning you to just completely ignore me, right? And that's what you're doing too. So we have to think more like a courtship and not a one-night stand. We have to think, and the way I always talk about courtships is that we really need to have the patience to court a potential client. But at the same time, we have to have the urgency to do it on a regular basis. Type of like schedule, regular type of frequency. So let me give you a few ideas when I talk about, well, what is it that we want to accomplish by sending this email? So it's not always going to be to sell them something or to make an appointment, right? We need to stop that like immediately. So perhaps part of like why we're sending an email, and it could change every time. I just want to give you ideas. This doesn't all, I hope, happen in one email and we're done. But perhaps I'm sending you an email to create credibility with you and to demonstrate my expertise. So perhaps I'm educating you on how to select a sales coach or how to implement a training program in your company. Perhaps I'm trying to show your boss how to onboard potential sales reps, things like that. So they're ones where we're going to educate and again try to demonstrate our expertise. There are other ones too, and it may sound like I'm talking about the same thing here, but they're a little bit different. There are ones where I just really want to cement the value of you continuing to read my emails to you, that there's value in this. So perhaps I'm sending you a resource. Now, me sending you a resource is, it would be idiotic for me to think that that resource is so damn good that by the time you get done reading that email, you're going to buy something from me, or that you're going to immediately accept my request to have an appointment with you. This is long-term stuff that I'm thinking here. So resources, perhaps part of what I'm looking to do here, again, because I want to create value in this relationship, is I'm introducing you to someone. Again, how can I think me introducing you to someone who could either buy your product or service or help you in some way is going to lead to an immediate sale? So do you see, so far by changing that thought process now, we can accomplish different things over the course of this courtship. Now, right about now, you might be thinking, geez, it sounds like what Paul is talking about here. He's saying long-term and everything else. And when I say long-term, I don't mean that, all right, let's just all just make sure we've got money coming in for the next decade and a half while we just like slowly court them. No, I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying that there's got to be kind of some kind of middle ground between continually like carpet bombing people with the same message, which is I'd like to sell you something or make an appointment with you to sell you something, versus just kind of ignoring them. There has to be a middle ground. And that's part, the middle ground is really this courtship. So there's other things that we could be doing. Remember, what is it that I want to accomplish by sending you that email? It also could be Maybe I want you to attend an event that's coming up. Maybe it's one that I'm sponsoring and it's free. And again, it's an opportunity for me to demonstrate, or my company to demonstrate, their expertise to you. It could be to simply find out if you're attending an industry event. And perhaps then my strategy here is to find out if you're attending so that I can come by, shake your hand in person. Maybe we could grab a quick coffee or a drink or something like that, right? Preferably a drink, man. Like, screw the coffee, man. I think you can get to know people like very, very well having a few shots of tequila and getting hammered. I mean, what the hell? You only go around once, right? But also too, perhaps the purpose of my email, again, what is it that I want to accomplish by sending this email to you? Perhaps it's to create two-way communication, because you really haven't been responding to my emails, right? That never happens in sales, right? Everybody always responds. Perhaps you're not, like, God forbid, responding to me. So now what I want to accomplish is kind of drawing you out and getting you to engage in conversation. So in that case, my objective now is to hit you with a question or two, thought-provoking, to get you to answer, and now we're engaged in some kind of a dialogue. You know, another thing, and I want you right now, if you're not driving in the car, to write down the following. You know, in sales, I think we forget how important repetition is. And it's like we get it, but we don't get it. So, you know, obviously, if you're continually hitting people up for an appointment or to buy your product or service, you understand how valuable repetition can be, right? So it's important, yes, that we have people hear things multiple times. I maintain that if you are just doing nothing but repeating that message of, hi, I want to sell you something, hi, I want to make an appointment to sell you something, that's low value. It gets old very, very quickly. But there are other things that need to be repeated. And it could be things like your value. It could be things like your expertise. It could be things, credibility of the company, maybe the longevity of your company, industry reputation. Perhaps it could be, you know, the fact that your customer service team is always like the highest rated in the industry. Maybe it's the fact that you guys have some kind of exclusive thing that only you can say in your industry, or maybe it's like something in your process, something about your widget or whatever. Things like that have to be repeated over time. It could be even things that we refer to in sales as evidence. The purpose of evidence is to defeat doubt and to reduce the probability of skepticism and people pushing back on you and just like doubting you, basically, as I said. Now, you know, it could be that what you're doing with the repetition is providing continual evidence to keep them looking at you in a really, really positive light, so that when they are ready to buy, you are that logical choice, right? And what we talk about in sales a lot is top of mind. When I think it was Daniel Pink who said, really what we want to be striving for is not somebody thinking about you, right? I mean, lots of people out there, I'm sure, think about Paul Castain and the Sales Playbook podcast and the Sales Playbook communities. And that's great for my ego. And that's about it. Because you thinking about me doesn't put money in my pocket. It doesn't help me grow the business that I'm trying to grow. But what I'm striving for is top of mind preference, so that when you're ready to hire a sales coach, when you're ready to take on a sales trainer for your organization, when you're ready for a keynote speaker, when you're ready to have your team or just yourself attend a webinar, guess what? Castain comes to mind. So what we're really striving for here is that top of mind preference. Now, that brings us to item number two. So very, very quickly, item number one, the first thing you want to think about before emailing a potential client is, what do I want to accomplish by sending this email? And another way of saying it, I guess, could be, what is it that I want this person to do as a result of this email? So what is it that I want to accomplish? What is it that I want them to do? Maybe action that I want you to take, or Maybe there's no action. It's just simply that I want you to kind of see me differently. I want to like drive some points home, so on and so forth. But the second thing now, the second thing that you need to think about before emailing a potential client is, how am I going to package this message? How am I going to package this message? And there's all different things you should be thinking about. So if number one, we're thinking about a different message, right? That it's not always, hey, buy from me, or hey, let's get together so I can try to have you buy from me. And then we think about packaging that in different ways. This is what keeps the courtship interesting. This is what keeps people like continuing to open your emails, take your phone calls, like respond to you on LinkedIn. So the second thing, again, is, how will I package the message? So perhaps one way that I could do it is I could package one of my messages, not every one of them, as a story. People love story. I mean, history has been shaped by storytellers. So is there a way that you can tell a story, maybe perhaps of a problem that you solved, or how somebody was absolutely delighted with your product or service? Right? There's lots of ways that you can use stories. The other way that you can package your email, and I just did a blog post on this not too long ago, and I talk about this a lot, actually. It's what they call the 3-to-5-sentence email. The 3-to-5-sentence email. Two like huge advocates of this particular style, Daniel Pink, again, second shout out to Daniel Pink, and also Guy Kawasaki is also the other advocate of this. So again, the whole point of a 3-to-5-sentence email is that it passes the test of a very quick scan. So think about this for a minute. When we look at the people who are going to be receiving your email, I would hope that they're as busy as the average person in their position. The reason why I would hope that, because if they're not, I'm thinking they might not be good for you. And why would they not be good for you? Well, if they're not busy, they might not be like making any money in their company, and they might not be able to afford you and your widget. So if they're busy, or at least like, you know, somewhat busy, what's going to happen is they're going to be getting a lot of emails. So they're going to scan that email very, very quickly. So one of the ways that we can pass the test of the scan is by doing a briefer email. So it doesn't look like War and Peace. Oh, it's only 3-to-5 sentences. I can handle this. And boom. Now, we're not going to do this every time. But as a way to change up the packaging, keep the courtship interesting, a 3-to-5-sentence email. Here's something else. I mentioned something that's going to pass the test of the scan. So something that's going to be scan-friendly. Here's something else. If we want to make an email and we want to package it in a scan-friendly type of way, and I talked about this in last week's Sales Playbook podcast, we need to put some things in there, and I refer to them as speed bumps in your email. And what a speed bump is, it's something that when somebody's scanning, makes them like jam on the brakes, or at a minimum slow down and go, wow, what's this? Catches their attention and makes them stop. So how do we do that? Well, one of the ways that we do that is we can put certain words in bold. We can use different colors in the type with certain key points. When you look at your call to action, like click here or something like that, what you can do with that is you can have the word click in lowercase, and you can have here all uppercase. You can italicize things. You could do things, again, larger. I know of a printer that in their PS, instead of a PS, they had a I forget what they call it. It's kind of like a call out, but there's a different graphic design term. And kind of showing my age here, it would be something like, if you remember, like the old like Batman show, like where it's like when they would punch somebody, it'd be like pow or bam or something like that. What they did was they took like the word bam or something like that, and instead of PS, they used the word bam, and it was all like nice and in color and everything, a little bit larger. It was obviously an image, and it was right where a PS would go, so that the eye would go there and it would capture their attention. So that's one of the ways that you can put speed bumps in there. Another way, and this comes from, if there are any Dan Kennedy fans out there, one of the things, and even Frank Kern fans, one of the things that Frank Kern had said a while ago, he said one of the most powerful call to actions that he had ever seen came from Dan Kennedy. Frank Kern was a student of his. And he said it was very, very simple. What he instructed him to do, Dan Kennedy instructed Frank Kern to do, is at the end of an email for the call to action, or at the end of a sales letter, you can do this too, is just put in bold and as a headline, here's what I'd like for you to do. And you could package that like, here's what I'd like for you to do, and you could put their name in it. So here's what I'd like for you to do, Paul. And then you just give them the call to action. I'd like for you to click here and have a look at some of the success stories that we have in the printing industry or whatever. So that is one of the ways that you can make it a scan type of friendly email. But there's more. And I talked about this one today, which is, by the way, for those of you like listening at some point in the future, today's March 19th. 2017. So if you go back to my blog post, and they're all dated, and you go back to one of the two that I put out on March 19th, 2017, you'll see that there is a blog post where I talk about a technique called the potato chip. Now, again, this falls under the heading of how will I package the message? If you're going to package something as a potato chip, what the concept here is, you got to think about a potato chip, right? You can't eat just one. They actually make you hungry. You're not going to sit there, eat one potato chip and say, yeah, I'm good. And if you are, I'm going to hate you because I've got about 100 pounds I got to drop because I've probably eaten about, I don't know, about 20,000 too many freaking potato chips. So the deal is with potato chips is that in this context, it's something to make them hungry for more, where you hint at a result. You maybe mention that you have some information, and you go a step further and you make it very relevant to them. How do you do that? Well, it goes back to pre-call planning. Pre-call planning is not just for picking up a phone. It's also before you get in touch with them in any way, shape, or form. So it's really planning, not just pre-call planning. It's just planning in general. And one of the things that you can do in that research is find something that would be along the lines of what we call a trigger or a trigger event, also known as a compelling event, something going on in their world that would dramatically increase the probability of them needing your product or service. And what you can do is you can reference that trigger event, so long as it's not something that's tacky, like, yeah, I heard you guys, you know, your sales are in the shitter and I thought I'd reach out to you. I don't mean like that kind of thing, but maybe they have an upcoming product launch or they're expanding into the Northeast or whatever. And what you're going to do in this case, as far as a potato chip, you're going to say something along the lines of, I have some ideas that could really underscore or really help with that expansion into the Northeast. Or I have some thoughts on this upcoming product launch of your X2000 series. And so there's the potato chip, the hinting at something. And then we marry it in with another technique that I'm going to mention in a second. But here's why the potato chip thing works. The brain loves a good mystery. The brain loves a good mystery. It has a need to resolve things and not keep it open-ended. It has a need to connect the dots, to resolve the mystery. So what you're doing here is you're working with how the brain is wired, and you're offering them that opportunity to kind of close the loop. But also it works because people today, all of us, I would say, are really, we suffer from this whole FOMO thing, F-O-M-O, fear of missing out. So the gist here, or the feeling could be here, that if I don't talk to Paul Castain when he reaches out, I might miss out on some valuable insight into how my competitors are going about their sales training. Or if I don't talk to, you know, Janice when she calls up, I might miss out on a few ideas on how to onboard all those new people for our expansion into the Northeast. Or if I don't speak with Todd, you know, I'm going to miss out on what Todd is talking about in terms of, you know, three things you really need to avoid when you have a product launch. So that's a good reason, or a few good reasons why it works. But now I promised another technique that is joined at the hip with the potato chip. I just realized, like, I'm a freaking poet and didn't know it. You know how I hesitated? I was like, they're going to think I'm just being really corny here. No, I was being corny, but it just happened. I don't know what to say. That's why, like, I had that moment there where I was like, oh, shit, do I got to, like, do this? But, yeah, I do. And I'm not going to edit it out. And I'm not going to edit out the fact that I just said shit two times. It's just, I'm not going to do it. Sorry. Anyway, so the second technique that goes with that is this thing I talk about a lot, and it's called the reverse call to action. The reverse call to action. The reverse call to action is really the opposite of your typical traditional call to action, if you will. And a traditional call to action, especially in an email, it'd be something like click here for whatever, right? Like a click here type of thing. Well, basically what you're doing in a traditional call to action is you're asking them to do something. Now, I'm not here to tell you that's the wrong way to do it. It's the right way to do it. Keep doing it. But if we want to change things up, every once in a while, consider using a reverse call to action. So instead of asking them to do something, you're going to tell them the exact day and time to expect something from you. Now, why do we do that? Well, part of the reason why we do that is that people actually pick up their damn phone, right? I mean, because isn't that like a bit of a challenge that a lot of us have? It's like, you know, I've got this great message. I've worked on my whole phone pitch, but like nobody picks up their damn phone. Well, one of the ways you can increase the probability of somebody picking up their phone is using the potato chip technique by intriguing them. And then telling them, hey, I'm actually going to be calling you on Thursday morning at 8:45 a.m. I'm hoping you'll take my call because, and you insert something there like kind of that answers the question, what's in it for you, like for taking the damn call. And so that is the reverse call to action. The other thing about the reverse call to action that's so like incredible is that it sets up your next attempt to get a hold of them. So instead of all these different things that you're doing to try to like get in there and sell them something, being like separate little entities and little like silos, what you're doing now is you're getting all the different forms of outreach to work together. So in essence, your email can now set up a phone call that you're going to make in 3 days to them. That phone call that you make to them in 3 days that, you know, statistically might turn into a voicemail. That voicemail could turn into having them watch for a FedEx from you. That FedEx now could have them be prepared that you're going to stop by and say the world's quickest hello. It's endless what you can do. But did you notice each thing now reinforces the next thing? So now you're communicating with a map. And you've mapped out that communication, so it's like no more seat of your pants. So here are a few other things in terms of packaging the message. You can package it with some facts. Remember we said using evidence. How about an embedded video of you calling them by name and just a very brief 58, 59 second video? And in that video, you're using the reverse call to action. And you might say, and there's so many different ways to do it, you know what? Calling them by name, Todd, I'm actually going to be calling you on Tuesday morning at this time or Thursday afternoon at this time. I'm hoping you'll take the call because here's what's in it for you if you do. And using that potato chip technique, I might send an email to you and I might have a screenshot of something, again, to provide you with proactive evidence. Do you see that? Proactive evidence, which is a lot different than me waiting for you to tell me that, yeah, I think you're full of shit, or you pushing back and just saying, yeah, well, what makes you so sure? Or everybody says that, boom, I'm hitting you with evidence. Perhaps the way that I'm going to package my email is with some kind of creativity and something maybe where the tone is a little more lighthearted, fun, or funny. I mean, I've had people that in the research, I've noticed that they've been fans of Star Wars, so I've had some fun with putting a visual in there and making a funny meme. I didn't do that the first time I reached out to them, but we've had conversations over time. I've seen things on the website. You know, John is a huge Star Wars fan or whatever, and I've used what I've been given, right? This information that I found, I've learned how to leverage it, have fun with it, use it in a way that might be just a gentle nudge to some other people. And then finally, I mentioned this before, part of like how I package an email, I might have an entire email that's like, it's super short, sweet, and to the point, like way under the 3 to 5 sentence thing I mentioned. And the whole point of it is a question to you. And it starts with maybe in the subject line, quick question, Mary. And then I open it up and I ask Mary that quick question. So there are two things, again, that I want you to think about before you send out your emails. Number one, what is it that you want to accomplish? And, you know, really the action that you want them to take as a result of them reading that email. But then how am I going to package this and put it into that bigger perspective? It's like courting them. How do we make this date interesting? So it's not like we're still showing up with the same bad pickup line and the same bad like proposition, whatever it is. And here, I mean, just like change it up and think about how you can package it to keep it interesting and to keep it where your emails are being opened, read, and responded to. So I'm hoping that that was helpful. I mean, there's actually a lot of ideas in there for you. And if you want to just put it all into like one category here, really we could easily change the title of today's podcast to how do I change it up and keep it interesting enough that they're going to read this? You know, that they're going to open this, they're going to read it, and they're going to respond. Because those are the three things that you and I need for that to be a successful email. So if you found value in today's podcast, I want to remind you that on March 23rd, which is this Thursday coming up at 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time, we're going to be hosting our How to Write Awesome Sales Emails webinar. And during the webinar, I'm going to be offering over 50 actionable ideas. So it's not going to be like a bunch of theory and, you know, like all kinds of philosophical stuff. It's going to be actionable things. I'm going to be sharing several examples of things your peers are doing and what I'm doing right in the trenches. I'm also going to be sharing 10 sales email templates that have been working like a charm for me in my practice. And by the way, that I have my coaching clients using all the time. It's not like we came up with these ideas like 3 weeks ago and they still have to be tested. We've been using these 10 templates now for years. If you'd like to learn more and certainly to reserve your spot before the 23rd comes and goes, I'd like for you to visit yoursalesplaybook.com/rockyouremail. yoursalesplaybook.com/rockyouremail. And with that, I'm Paul Castain from yoursalesplaybook.com. I am wishing you an incredible week ahead. Go get them. The Sales Playbook Podcast is a Castain Training Systems production. Visit us at www.yoursalesplaybook.com.